You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I think I had the biggest barf of all. I had like dry heaves to go with my barf.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
I just know if I had Buster and he broke his collarbone in the classic and was out for the whole season and he was on my team, I would hate the classic forever.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
If Buster Posey injures himself at the World Baseball Classic, you will see me every time they have it outside the gates with signs, because I will never forgive them for the atrocity that...
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome to episode 176 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join with me on this episode are Matt Thompson and Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
Doing well. This is the first episode as a group for us in 2017. So I formally wish you all a happy new year. And let's start off with a bang in 2017, man.
It is. It's our first episode of 2017. Matt, how are you? How was your Happy New Year?
Good, and this is not my first episode of 2017.
Well, it's the first one the listeners are hearing. We may have been recording. You and I recorded a bunch today already. Those episodes won't come out till later. You'll get to hear all the content we have been doing on getting ready for 2017, a podcast every single day, and sometimes two podcasts a day, for the next 6 weeks or so. So you're going to be getting a ton of content on this feed. Matt and I have been doing prospect podcasts. The entire crew here, Friends Fantasy Benefits, have been doing team preview podcasts. And all that stuff are going to be coming out over the course every day for the next 6 weeks until we jump into our regular 5-day-a-week schedule starting in mid-February. But joining us today is a friend of the podcast, friend of mine, Lore Michaels from Masters Ball. Lore, how are you?
I'm just fine here. I don't know if I believe in New Year's, but I guess we had a good time eating crab and watching TV and playing games until midnight. Although all my friends and I, we're getting older. We're all talking about East Coast New Year's next year, that it will stay up till 9 and then go to bed. I'm doing all right. Doing all right. Happy to be with you guys. It's always a pleasure.
I start my actual quote unquote day job at midnight, and so I had to be work at midnight on New Year's Eve, or New Year's Day, whatever you want to call it. But usually when I'm off on New Year's, I celebrate the East Coast New Year's, and I'm in bed by 10 o'clock.
So somebody asked me a few months ago what my all time favorite concert I ever saw was, and I've seen a lot of shows since the late '60s and a lot of great bands, and I said, Patti Smith 2 years ago at the Fillmore. And they went, why? And I went, okay, no opening act. She was on stage at 8 o'clock. She was done playing at 10:30, and I was back home in bed at 11. Yeah. And they all nodded and went, oh, that's great.
Laura, for those who don't know you, but, obviously everybody should know who you are by now, but for some reason they don't, tell people where you could be reached on social media and then what you do over at Masters Ball.
Social media, you can follow me on the infamous Twitter at Lar Michaels, and Lar, L-A-W-R, it's just short for Lawrence, so it's L-A-W-R-M-I-C-H-A-E-L-S. And I love for that. I love Twitter. And then I'm at Masters Ball. I'm one of the principals there with my mates Todd Zola and Brian Walton. And we also have Zach Steinhorn and Patrick Wojcicki and Pasco Varnico, who writes about English Premier Soccer. Patrick writes about the NHL. And we cover baseball and football, which actually Todd and I have been doing that for over 20 years now. And I write for them. I still write occasionally for the USA Today and Steve Gardner. So you can find me all of these places and poking around to other things, usually where I could cause some kind of mischief, but benign mischief.
And you're also an accomplished musician. For those who don't know, our theme music is from Lorne Michaels' band.
Oh, that's awesome. I forgot you got – what song do you use? Or do you know? this is a good riff, but it's like a Steely Dan album. These songs are good, but I don't know the names of it.
Geography Matters?
Yeah, we use Geography Matters as our intro and outro music.
Yeah, that's a good cranking intro outro song, I think. But yeah, that's my band, my studio band, Strictly Olga. I play bass in the Biletones. It's a lot of good fun. In fact, Friday, February 3rd, I think it is, we're playing the Bistro in lovely downtown Hayward, California.
Nice. So you can, if you want to actually meet Lorne Michaels, definitely go down there for that. Mm-hmm. You can also come down to the Rec Room, where Lorne Michaels and I will be battling out once again for the Barf League Trophy, which is the Bay Area Roto Fantasy League. Bunch of industry guys getting together in San Francisco every year. Well, last year was the first year. This will be the second year. I believe it's going to be on February 25th this year, where I will attempt to finish in fourth place once again.
Not me. I would be happy to finish in fourth place. I think I had the biggest barf of all. I had like dry heaves to go with my barf. But I also had, in fairness, I think my number three pick was AJ Pollock, and I had Kershaw, and I traded Chris Sale at the wrong time, And then,
I appreciate you trading him to me.
I mean, I got what I could for him, and I did what I could, but I basically losing your top three picks, that really, that's hard to fix.
It hurts. It hurts a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happens. But let's jump in and talk about 2017. Because it is a new year, we get a new chance to win fantasy leagues. And let's start off with some prep questions, because most people that are listening at this point, a few people are doing drafts, but I think it's pretty rare that people are drafting in the first week of January. For the most part, people are prepping for the 2017 season. So, Laura, let's start with you. What are your fantasy baseball New Year's resolutions for 2017?
Oh, I don't have any. I have kind of a more high level fantasy resolution. And that is, I don't know about you guys, but I have a tendency to second guess myself and then kick myself for second guessing myself. And I made this rule with myself that the only place I could second guess myself was in fantasy baseball. So that's the only resolution I don't really believe in years per se. I consider them arbitrary, although it is, I changed the number on my date, on the Julian calendar date, when I write a check and stuff, but I don't really change anything. I try not to second guess my fantasy baseball stuff anymore either. It's just sort of, you make the best choices you can at any given moment, because your objective is to try to improve your team as much as you can, and you try to let it go. Otherwise, I would be in a padded cell, I think. Some people think I already should be in one, so they'll tell you.
Mike, what are your fantasy baseball resolutions for 2017?
Yeah, I know that you have actually mentioned this a lot in the offseason and stuff, but for me, it's just the volume of leagues. Over the course of the last few years, I have really kind of seen an uptick in the amount of fantasy leagues that I have participated in. And last year was the first time that it really, especially in tandem with a bigger role in terms of our website and in terms of, writing at other various outlets, it just became too much to really, invest all of my time into all of my leagues and give it my best shot. So, you know, my resolution for this year will be to cut down the amount of leagues that I'm in so that I can, you know, have a more successful, you know, and just a better time playing in the leagues, because last year it turned into more work as opposed to actually being something that I just love to, you know, check and do every single day. So I'm trying to get back to it being just a little simpler and hopefully more manageable in this upcoming year.
Matt, what are your fantasy baseball New Year's resolutions?
I think the obvious goal is to win more leagues. That would be nice. Writing more is something I like to do more this year. And also, I tend to completely almost write off guys that don't walk, and I need to kind of work on not doing that as much. You lose out on some guys like that, so it's just a personal preference of mine, but I need to not be as anti-walk guys as I am now.
Adam Jones, right?
Yeah. Matt Kemp, all them guys like that.
Billy Hamilton?
Yeah.
What about you, Justin?
Yeah.
Serious question, though. Out of those three guys you listed, I owned zero of them everywhere last year. So, yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I never own any of them if I can help.
Yeah. For me, I think my New Year's resolution is very similar to Mike. But it's a little bit more in depth in terms of I don't want to spread myself too thin. And part of that is less leagues. Because last year I played in 17 leagues and it crushed me. Absolutely. I mean, especially with taking on more stuff with Friends Fantasy Benefits, with writing for Fangraphs, doing other things. It absolutely destroyed me. And it cost me leagues. I mean, ultimately, I think I would have won two or three or four more leagues had it not been for the fact that I had so many leagues across so many formats. I mean, I was playing on ESPN, Fantrax, NFBC, Yahoo, CBS, I think I'm missing one. I was just absolutely just spread way too thin across too many formats. And so my New Year's resolution was to this year to cut off some leagues, especially ones that I wasn't really having fun with. You know, for me, you know, fantasy baseball is about having fun. I want to win money, and there's a lot of competition in it for me, but that competition is fun in itself. But I wanted leagues that I enjoyed playing in, and I was playing in a number of leagues that either were industry leagues that people had invited me to, or leagues that I'd just been in for so long, and they just weren't fun outside of the competition. And so for me, you know, cutting back on those leagues, I think gives me a better opportunity to focus on the ones I have left. I'll probably play in, you know, I'm going to play in, you know, 9 to 10 leagues this year, but I'll end up playing in 12, more than likely. But they'll hopefully all be fun and enjoyable leagues, and I'll win more because I like to win.
12 is still insane. That's still,
yeah, nice. I mean, I found that happening to me. Everything you guys said is totally right. At least I've had that same experience, and I'm cut back down to about, I think, 6 or 7 leagues total baseball. I'm in more football leagues than baseball leagues now, but I do like to play different formats. I think I always think some little trick key you learn in one format might help you in another one.
Mm-hmm.
So I always think that's just a good for worldview and stuff like that. But it is true. It becomes unmanageable. You forget to, you know, oh, this league has I have a Friday afternoon deadline that I could activate people, and you forget to do it. Or you have so many teams that your guys are playing against your guys all the time, and that ends up being not as much fun. So yeah, I think you said it. Both you guys said it best. Is the whole idea is, I mean, I like to win. I like to prove I'm smarter than everybody else, but mostly I just like to play, you know. I like that good feeling of, oh man, my team had a good day. They went, my team batted .386 today with 4 homers and 12 RBI and 2 steals. Woohoo. You know, that's a really good feeling. It is.
It is. It's a fantastic feeling, and it's one of those things where I think in the more leagues you play in, some of that gets lost, because I'm here, you know, I think the most amount of fun I've ever had in fantasy baseball was when I first started playing. I was in one league, and I always looked at that one team. You know, my attention wasn't split between teams. And don't get me wrong, I still have a ton of fun playing it. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it, and I wouldn't be talking about it either. the way I do, but like there is something about just like the simplicity of having a having fewer teams. Because then, you know, too, we always like the same players, and we end up drafting, you know, a bunch of teams with the same guys. And when those guys get hurt, you just lost, you know,
everything.
One injury just costs you nine leagues, you know, and that's never fun. So that is definitely my New Year's resolution. Let's talk about prep work, though. Laura, how do you start your draft prep for 2017?
You know, I think it's sort of just a never-ending process where, for the most part, I'm either writing player profiles during the season all year, keeping up with stuff, or you guys know how it is now. Once the off-season comes, if you're writing for periodicals, you're writing for everything. Everybody wants projections, analysis for the coming season, almost. If, you know, I mean, maybe you get a few weeks in October off, but once November comes, deadlines start popping at you. And so I think for me, it's just all year round. I'm just sort of writing player profiles and checking transactions. Although I've been pretty derelict the last few weeks. I haven't looked at much of anything news wise. So not since the winter meetings. But anyway, it's sort of a year round process for me at this point. And, you know, I'm working on the prospect list now. So I'm looking at prospects and writing the top ones that I'm writing about. Everybody gets a little sentence profile anyway, so that kind of embeds it in my brain somewhere, whether I like it or not.
Matt, what do you do to start your prep in the new year?
To be honest with you, it starts over the summer in reality. I mean, you keep updating stuff and looking at, you know, player blurbs, like Laura said, and constantly updating ranks here and there. The only time I really don't do any of that is take a couple of weeks off during the playoffs, just watch the playoffs, and then hit real hard after that and continuously update things then, and, you know, start making initial projections about now and then maybe tweak them a little bit before spring training with a little bit of injury news or role changes or and stuff like that. But, I mean, I think it's becoming more and more of an all-year-round thing for me, honestly.
Mike, are you an all-year-round guy, or are you really starting to ramp up right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always keeping up to date with player news and, you know, making sure that you know the player pool in and out. I mean, knowing just every single team and what they, you know, who's going to be, you know, probably batting leadoff and who is the backup, you know, to the closer right now. And, you know, just having an updated kind of, you know, visualization in your mind of who is on what team and everything is really important. But, you know, what I like to do personally is I always take a look back. I always take a look back at all my leagues and how the drafts went, what I could improve upon going into the next year, where I saw myself reaching, not just in one spot, but in multiple spots, you know, throughout the year in terms of, you know, transactions, you know, how many transactions did that person make in terms of trading and how involved were they? You know, so I just like to really make corrections to, you know, each individual league and, you know, just in general, make sure that I have a really good, you know, understanding of the player pool. Because you know, ultimately, once you get to drafts, everybody's going to know the player pool in and out. But if you have kind of a, you know, a step forward right now and can, you know, update things, you know, in an easier fashion, I think that that's a better way to kind of go about it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Mike, in terms of the first thing I kind of do after the season and when I start prepping for the new season is I take a look back. I take a really hard look at the mistakes that I've made along the way in the previous season and try to figure out ways that I can correct that. And that starts with looking at, you know, the players that I had that didn't pan out. It looks at the strategies I used in drafts and auctions. And I take a real hard look at where my mistakes were and see if I could find common threads in between leagues and teams. And then I start doing rankings and I start doing projections pretty much as soon as the winter meetings get going. And I continue to work hard on those throughout the beginning of the year. I'm still in that process. You can see all of our ranks, except for Mike's, because Mike hasn't finished his yet, on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. We've got pretty much all the rankers up there, and sortable ranks. You can sort by person or by position for that, so definitely go check that out. Let's talk about the World Baseball Classic, because the World Baseball Classic is coming up. It's kind of a fun event every year, or not every year, but when it comes around. I'll start with you this time, Mike. Are you worried about any players who are playing in the World Baseball Classic, either specific guys or just generally? Does it worry you when guys are playing in the extra baseball this early?
You know, my first thought on this is that, yes, I would be a little bit worried. People in general, and all, especially, athletes, they are creatures of habit. They, prepare pretty much the same way. And, they obviously have an off season in which they, work on certain things and everything. And when you start that up early, that's kind of going outside of your comfort zone and, makes you, it could make you liable to having kind of a late season kind of slump or, possibly, more risky in terms of injuries. But in general, I kind of took a look back at some of the rosters in 2013 and, there was no glaring hitters that had down seasons. But the thing that would worry me a bit is the pitching. Notable pitchers that are, going to be pitching in the World Baseball Classic that again are ramping things up early and, I think would, make themselves more susceptible to getting injured at some point in the season or having to miss a little bit of time due to rest or anything like that. So for me, if there is anybody that I would avoid, it would definitely be on the pitching side. At first glance, I would be a little bit hesitant to grab some players that are playing in the World Baseball Classic, but I don't think there really is a rationale to that. I think in general that it's not that risky. It's just something extra that we see these players get to participate in. And if you look at the USA team this year, there's a lot of guys on that team that are going to be taken in the first few rounds. So if you're worried about them, then I think you should change your whole entire way that you're going to draft.
Yeah, right.
Laura, what are your thoughts on the World Baseball Classic in terms of a fantasy impact? Is there one, or are you kind of ignoring it for the most part?
I'm mostly ignoring it. I mean, I think we all have fear of AJ Pollock syndrome, right? Really, it doesn't really make much difference if he gets hurt in a spring training game or a World Baseball Cup game. It does, it's sort of superfluous to me. He got hurt, right? So I don't, I just figure as far as getting hurt, I just have to be fatalistic about it and hope guys I covet don't. And I guess try to be grateful that they do get hurt before I drafted them anyway, which doesn't always happen. And I don't want anybody to get hurt. Let's face it. But I do think there is something that probably the level of competition and mental play that goes into it is probably a little higher in the Classic. And I think by virtue of that, I think it means that a lot of our players should settle into their zone or their groove a little faster, perhaps. So in that sense, it's probably not a bad thing. Baseball is all about timing, or at least a lot of it is timing. And I think the faster that you get into your timing zone, the more successful you will be. More successful you will be. There we go.
Matt, what are your thoughts on the World Baseball Classic in terms of a fantasy side?
I don't like it, man. I wish they wouldn't play in it. It's good baseball to watch on TV. It's better than watching spring training games, but I'm always worried about all my pitchers playing there. From a Cardinal perspective, I know Carlos Martinez is pitching this year for Dominican, and I don't like that. And Yadi Molina is going to catch for the Puerto Rican team. I don't like that because he gets so much work in the regular season. It's little things like that. I'd just rather not take – like Mike said, they're all creatures of habit. I just feel like everyone is – doomed to get injured, and if you play long enough anyways, and that just increases the chances. So I guess I'm out on that.
Yeah, I don't adjust anything in terms of my ranks or in terms of projections or anything because guys are playing or guys are not playing. But I would rather not see the guys that I like or the guys that are on, my favorite team play, and unfortunately, I guess, the Giants have a number of guys who are playing in the World Baseball Classic. For me, it's a matter of the pitchers. I'm just afraid that, you only have so many bullets throughout a season. You only have so many bullets throughout a career. Do you want to see them wasted in an event like this? It's good for the game worldwide. It's a fun, event in marketing baseball, but and it's really cool to see some of the international talent. I love watching the international talent because you get to see guys that, most people don't ever get to see or won't get to see for a few years because they won't have come over to the United States for a little while.
I like the Cuban team and the Japanese team are my favorite teams to watch.
Yeah, you know, the Korean team is cool to watch. Japan, Cuba, Dominican. I mean, you're seeing some guys you probably wouldn't get to see otherwise. So that to me is really cool. But I you know, I'm worried about, you know, Buster Posey catching. I'm worried about, you know, Bumgarner pitching, or in other pitchers that I like in terms of fantasy pitching. I just don't want to see anybody get hurt. You know, if everybody makes it through unscathed, I'll be happy. Because at the end of the day, like Laura said, last thing I want to see is someone get hurt, especially if I have an early draft, which hopefully this year I don't.
Yeah, and I mean, the Buster Posey, Yadier Molina, and they're catchers. They're, you know, just by definition of what they do, mm-hmm. they're 50% more, greater chance they'll get hurt than anybody else just because. So and it's true. Every player is an injury waiting to happen. There's no question about that.
Yeah, and I mean, there's nothing you can really do to necessarily project it. And the, you know, World Baseball Classic, it hasn't been around long enough for us to have, like, you know, usable data in terms of, hey, this play, you know, these amount of players tired out at the end of the season because they played in the World Baseball Classic. You know, I know a lot of articles and stuff have been written going both ways talking about the effect on the players. I don't think we have enough of a sample size yet to really gain anything from that information at this point. So I wouldn't even try to do that coming into 2017. Maybe by the next time it comes around.
I just know if I had Buster and he broke his collarbone in the Classic and was out for the whole season and he was on my team, I would hate the Classic forever.
And
it wouldn't matter what. It wouldn't matter. What they did to try to fix it.
If Buster Posey injures himself at the World Baseball Classic, you will see me every time they have it outside the gates with signs, just protesting and trying to shut it down, because I will never forgive them for the atrocity that they have committed.
I was at the game, actually working the game. He got hurt like 5 years ago. I mean, we all knew.
Which was his own fault, right? That was his own fault for getting hurt.
How dare you? How dare you, Matt?
Poor form, blocking the plate.
It was a classic run around third base, extra inning, short fly to right field. Everybody knew as soon as the ball was hit, you know, in the like 10th or 11th inning, everybody knew as soon as the ball was hit, there was a play at the plate. Everybody knew it. We were all standing up and, you know, it's just one of those things that happened. But everybody knew as soon as he got hit, it was bad for sure, you know.
And the fact that the game was
secondary.
And like a phoenix, he rose from the ashes only to spread greatness around to everyone.
There we go. Buster rules.
Wow.
I love Buster.
Yeah, I'm
love
done Buster. With this Buster Posey
love fest. Love Buster. He's great.
Let's jump into a different conversation. The NFBC ADPs have been released. And it's really interesting to kind of look at some of these early ADPs. And these are probably going to change, you know, drastically, you know, one way or another. You know, a lot of these drafts happen, you know, obviously before the start of the new year. They're players that are really, really into fantasy baseball. And these lines are going to move one way or another. But I just wanted to get your guys' take on where some guys are going early on. And see what you think, if they're underrated, overrated, and what you think of them for 2017. Let's start with Trey Turner, because this is a guy that is hot in terms of hype. He is currently going as the number 13th player overall off of NFBC. Lore, what are your thoughts on Trey Turner? Is this way too high, too low, or about right for you?
I think it's high. Personally, I was just looking at another draft. I will tell you, and well, several things. One is I pay almost no attention to ADP. I couldn't care less for the most part, because that's not how I draft. I draft relative to need, relative to my position in the draft, relative to who I think is the best guy that will fill the need I've gotten. It doesn't make any difference to me where if I think the guy will hit 26 homers, I'll take him irrespective of when he might come in ADP. That said, knowing when other people might draft a guy is healthy information. But I think, I mean, and I've done two mock drafts so far that are one for RotoWire magazine and one for the magazine that Peter Kreutzer publishes. And I'm also looking at one other one, which all on Fantrax. And the for the RotoWire, the Kreutzer's, the RotoMan's magazine, Turner was drafted number 18, actually. And we did that draft a week before Thanksgiving. And for RotoWire, which was 2 weeks later, he was drafted number 14. So clearly there is something in this, in that high early second round spot that attracts people. I wouldn't take him that early. He's got strikeout to walk number issues, at least as I see them so far in the majors, that I wish he would gain control over. It looks like based on his on-base numbers in the minors, he will. But I think he had 71 strikeouts to 18 walks. That's not what I would like to see out of a guy. And I think he's going to have a harder time adjusting this year than pitchers are going to have adjusting to him, and it'll be a little bit of a struggle. So, and plus that shortstop's pretty deep. You know, I'm okay with Brandon Crawford in the sixth round. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I agree with you. Matt, you took Trey Turner 19th overall in our 12-team mock that we're doing right now at Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Why did you take him there, and are you okay with his high as 13?
I have him ranked 12th overall in my personal rankings, so I'm good with this ranking. I think the floor is so high. I trust the skills. I mean, he was a top – he was a high-round pick or high draft pick for a reason. I look at the skill set, and I think the batting average, the batted ball profile calls for a high batting average too, with the speed combination. I think 290 is a realistic floor for batting average, and he's going to bat second in that lineup, so he's going to be good for 90 to 100 runs if he stays healthy. The steals are a safety net. He's going to have at least 40, possibly more if he runs a little bit. The power, I question. It could go anywhere from probably realistically 10 to 20 homers. I don't expect I expect a little bit lower on the lower, or a little bit more toward the lower end there. And if he's hitting second with Adam Eaton in front of him, I mean, you got to like what he's going to be at the lineup for some RBI chances. He's got some pop in the bat. The tri-position eligibility, he's going to have he's got second and outfield now. He's going to have shortstop. The way I look at him is, I mean, I've used this comp before. He's essentially Starling Marte for me with three positions. And I think the floor is high enough to where, yes, he might not be the 12th. I have him ranked 12th overall. I might not be the 12th best player, but he's going to return me top three value. I'm fairly confident in that, so I have no issues with this ranking.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Trey Turner for this year? You agree with Matt, or are you a little bit more hesitant?
Yeah, there's no world that I will ever live in where I would take Trey Turner above Starling Marte. That just flat out would never happen. This, I think, is a classic Carlos Correa situation. All of last year was screaming not to take Carlos Correa in the first round. I ended up being right, but it's not because, you know, I wanted that to happen. It's just, you don't take players that have, you know, not even a full season's worth of at-bats under the belt in the first round of fantasy drafts. And I, you know, make no mistake about it, the people that are in this industry love Trey Turner. They are going to pump him up all offseason, and he is going to be a top 11, 12, 13 pick in drafts. And that's just where it's going to be at. Now, if it's pick 20, I feel a little better about that just based on the speed alone and the fact that there was only, you know, 28 guys that stole 20 or more bases last season. So certainly the floor for his speed is amazing, and that's something that you should definitely covet. But I can't do it. You know, the fact that he has no, you know, and I also would be the type of guy that, you know, year two of Mike Trout would have told you not to take him in the first round either. So, yes, I will miss on some of these guys. And if Trey Turner has a, you know, $45 season, then, you know, I missed out on him. That's fine. But I would have missed out last year on Carlos Correa. I didn't. It's going to be the same this year. I don't think that he has the ability. I mean, he stole 33 bases in the second half last year. There's no way that continues. There's no, I mean, yeah, even if you pencil him in for 40 now, that's great. But a lot of Steamer and Baseball HQ projections have him up towards 20 home runs as well. No way. I just, there's no way I can take him in the first round. And, you know, and like Laura said as well, the shortstop position is deeper than in years past. And there's just other guys to go with that I think have a longer track record and you can bank on, you know, fulfilling their draft spot.
Yeah. For me, I'm looking at him as like a 10, 35, 10, 40 guy with a 290, 300 average. And I may be a little bit low on some of the projections, but I'm going to I'm going to err on the side of caution with a guy that hasn't had a full season in the major league level. I completely agree with you, Mike. To me, the hype is insane, and you pretty much need him to repeat what he did last season in order for him to be worth where you're going to take him. I mean, he's currently going around guys like Anthony Rizzo, Miguel Cabrera, Charlie Blackman. I mean, sure, what we would figure are as sure bets. And I just can't imagine that Trey Turner is a sure bet. I don't even think he's a sure bet to bat second. And so, like, a lot of people are like, well, he's going to bat second. He's, you know, he's going to be able to steal spots batting, you know, steal bases and, you know, and hit in front of, like, Daniel Murphy and Bryce Harper. I don't think there's any guarantee that Dusty Baker, a guy who's notorious for screwing around with younger players, keeps him at two, especially if for some reason he was to start off slow. We could be looking at a guy who's batting 6-7. And that would really damage his fantasy outlook. I love the skill set. I think long-term he is going to be a valuable asset in fantasy and probably a, you know, top 2-3 round pick for years to come. But to me, I can't buy into this hype. I think Carlos Correa is the perfect corollary with the value that we're seeing right now with Trey Turner. It's just a little bit out there for me.
See, I think he's so safe. I think the skills, the batted ball profile, the line drive percentage, the hitting more balls in the air in the second half, stealing more bags. I there's not anything I'm worried about with this profile. Your lawyer brought up the only concern I have is he doesn't walk as much as you'd want. But, I mean, it's not like it's a bad walk rate. It's still a thing and doesn't strike out, only 18%. I do take it back. The walk rate was only 4%. That's not good. But the K percentage was only 18%. The BABIP's always going to be high with a guy with this skill set. I mean, look at his career BABIP all throughout the minor leagues. He's not going to hit 342 again, but I'm confident in 290, 300. So, I'm
okay with that. But, I mean, the fact that he had a 225 ISO in his stint in the major leagues is insane. I mean, absolutely insane. This is a guy that's never even come close to that in the minor leagues. So for him to come up and tear up pitching from, you know, an isolated power kind of perspective, to me seems unlikely. I think he's a guy that hits, like I said, 10 home. I'm going to pencil in, you know, 10 to 12 home runs and 35 to 40 stolen bases, which is extremely valuable, but I don't know. You know, I mean, if he maybe started the season with his shortstop eligibility, I'd bump him up a little bit, but he doesn't have to start the year, which means you have to draft him as a second baseman or an outfielder. Those positions are extremely deep this year. To me, it's not worth that high of a pick. I would be taking him around 20 to 30, you know, somewhere in the 20s probably. And at that price, he's long gone in drafts. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you where you have him as your second baseman. I'm looking at your rankings right now. You have Daniel Murphy ahead of him, which, okay, I understand that. Who's your second baseman? Robinson Cano. Okay. I'd take Turner over Cano because I think the floor is higher. But
you think the floor on Trey Turner is higher than Robinson Cano's?
I do with the steals, yes, 100%.
I don't so much think that the floor is higher so much for Turner as – as Cano gets older, at some point his numbers are going to drop a little bit.
Yep. And
I think it's what is it? Born yesterday, the one star is going on the rise, and the other one's on the decline.
Yeah. So. My thing about this situation isn't the player. I love the player, Trey Turner, but the problem is the draft spot. Like, you have guys like E5, you know, that I would gladly, who's done it year in and year out. Yes, he is aging. You know, Starling Marte is my biggest problem because he is like the same type of profile, not a high power guy, but definitely a high stolen base asset. And he's going, at least right now, double the spots behind him. You know, he's going at 26, Turner's at 13. That's where I have the problem. I have problems with Xander Bogaerts going behind him when we've seen him have a strong floor. Young still has a lot of ceiling left. We have guys like George Springer. I mean, I would never take George Springer ahead of Turner, but you get where I'm going with this. There's a lot of guys that have been in the league longer and have had to adjust already. Trey Turner hasn't had to adjust. And there's also an argument to be made that the lineup itself won't need to try and generate runs. Bryce Harper had a down year last season, but what's to say he doesn't come back and just start, you know, making, you know, hitting 50 home runs again. All of a sudden, you know, Trey Turner's not going to be stealing bases if he's hitting 50 home runs. This is a stronger lineup. You know, there's a lot of things that I just, not just the floor, but there's a ton of risk even besides that with Turner at 13. I just don't get it.
Let's go ahead and move on and talk about a pitcher that I was a little bit surprised to see ranked as highly as he is. That's Yu Darvish is being taken as the number 39th player overall in NFBC leagues. So let's start with you this time, Matt. What are your thoughts on Yu Darvish for the 2017 season? Is 39 fair or too high, too low?
I think it's a little bit too high, but it's not anything super egregious. I'd have Darvish around the – I think I have him in the 52, 53 range. That's not too far off 39, but, I mean, I would much rather have, you know, you guys like Johnny Cueto going ahead of him. I think Cueto's safer. I'm still in on, you know, David Price a little bit. He's right around where I have Darvish. Verlander's in that same grouping. He still has the injury concerns off the Tommy John. The nastiest stuff in the league, though. Pitching in Texas. I like Darvish. I think 39 is a little bit high compared to a lot of the. He's in kind of that deeper tier of starting pitching for me. So if I don't get Darvish, I'm not upset. I'll just wait around and I'll grab somebody from that tier with a pick or two later. So 39 is probably a little aggressive for me.
Laura, what are your thoughts on Darvish for this year? 39 seem appropriate or too high, too low?
I think, was that Matt that just articulated?
Because yeah.
I think I'm very, very much in line with what he said. Again, just for the archivists in our magazine, in the Rotoman magazine draft, Darvish went 34 as opposed to 39 at NFBC. And for the Rotowire magazine, he went 49. So again, it's right in the zone. In fact, he's right kind of in the middle of those two. But I just look at, you know, we already talked about injuries, and he hasn't pitched 200 innings since 2013. So that's enough for me to just go, okay, somebody else could take a risk, especially a high risk. If I'm talking about like a gamble as a fourth starter, okay. But like for a number one or a number two starter, I like the Cueto pick better.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Darvish for 2017?
This is tough because I don't love the spot. I don't love 40th overall. That's certainly, you know, paying an ace price tag for a guy that still we can't even guarantee is going to hit 160 innings next year, you know, let alone, you know, the usual ace, you know, innings, which is, you know, 190 or above, which he's only had, you know, twice in 2012 and 2013. The last 2 years, you know, have obviously been more of a struggle when you look at 2014 and 2016 combined. I love the upside, though. In shallower formats, I'm okay with taking him very high around that area because, you know, even if you look at the second half last year, he was top eight in swinging strike rate. His, 12 strikeouts per nine were among the league's elite, and that's what we need in fantasy. You need guys that can strike people out. Even though he's more of a fly ball profile that doesn't fit well in Arlington, his expected ERA was 3.2 in the second half. Certainly worthy of being up there in the, you know, elite class of starting pitchers. So I love the pitcher. I think he's going to be amazing this year. The price I think is a little bit too high for me, but I can't hate on somebody taking Yu Darvish as their ace if they ended up missing out on some of the earlier guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily going to blast anybody taking him that high. To me, I think the innings is where I agree with you guys in terms of I think it's just a little bit too high for me. I have Yu Darvish as my number 14th starting pitcher. I think I'd rather have guys like Verlander and Cueto above him, you know, even a Carlos Carrasco. To me, it's just I'm not sold that he's going to be able to deliver a full slate of innings. I was worried with some of the starts down the stretch, just kind of how he tired out and how he looked down the stretch when the Rangers really, really needed him to produce. You know, he had some issues down the stretch. So I'm out on Darvish for this year at that price. If the price drops considerably, and I mean, I feel I need to mention, you know, in starting pitching tends to go a little bit higher in NFBC leagues, especially because a lot of the leagues that have drafted are draft and hold leagues where you can't pick up guys throughout the year and things like that. So, you know, they get a little inflated there. So that could be why he's so high in the NFBC ADPs, but for me, 39 is quite a bit higher than I think I would take. I think I'd want him more in the 60s, which, like Trey Turner, probably means I'm out on him. Let's go ahead and move on. Talk about Billy Hamilton. He's ranked number 55 overall, according to the NFBC ADP. He is the number 13th outfielder off the board. Lore, are you a Billy Hamilton guy? Will you be taking shares at that price?
Nope. I've never been a Hamilton fan. In fact, when he came up, I kept arguing that Ben Revere was a better deal. And last year, Raj Davis was a better deal. And there's always somebody out there that will deliver more than just the steals and close to the steals. But his on-base numbers just still – he improved them a lot last year. But he didn't improve his contact rate by, his strikeout to walk rate by that much. And, you know, I just, no. And again, he got taken 55. It's right in the zone. 59 for Rotoman, Mag, 67. But no, he's just one of those guys I'll never take because he's so one dimensional. Unless I can get like the 21st round, right?
Yeah, which will never happen, especially if you're in a draft with me or Mike. Mike, what are your thoughts on Billy Hamilton?
Well, they're definitely opposite lore, and I understand the people that want production from each category from the players that they take. I completely agree with it, and I have no problems with people that hate Billy Hamilton because I understand. I get it. You know, he does not offer you anything in terms of, you know, batting average and, you know, especially home runs and all that stuff. With that said, he is the only player with 50 plus stolen bases in each of the last three seasons. He has also had $23 or more in roto value in each of the last three seasons. That's while hitting a terrible batting average, terrible on base percentage, not hitting for any power. You know, that's across the board. So even if we see, you know, very little improvements in terms of the batting average or on base percentage and even the runs and RBIs, you know, if we see any type of improvements there, then that's kind of gravy. So I agree with taking Billy Hamilton up that high. I completely understand people fading it and hating on somebody that is one dimensional. I completely get it. But for me personally, I'm okay with having a guy like Hamilton on my team because he assures me in a, you know, very, you know, bad stolen base environment in baseball right now, he assures me of at least 50 stolen bases. And that is what I'm paying for.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Billy Hamilton for 2017?
I don't really hate following after Mike when we were talking about hitters because we're normally on the same page with a lot of them. And I'm right there with you guys on Hamilton. Last year I wasn't. I was a bit risk averse. I didn't like the batted ball profile, but now he's hitting the ball more on the ground, which is obviously utilizing his skill set. 47% ground ball rate for him, which is best his career high by at least 5%. So you can't argue with that. The second half, big jumps in OBP. The 13% walk rate in the second half is much better than his career total of 6.5. So he pretty much doubled that. I was watching a game against the Cardinals at the end of the season. He hurt his oblique. I mean, he's had plenty of time to recover from that. But I mean, you get what you pay for here, and you're paying for 50 steals, and the upside is upwards of 70 to 80 steals. To be honest, if you can put it together, in the last two seasons, he's only played 114 and 119 games. The season before that, he played 152 and stole 56. He stole 57 and 58 the last 2 years at lesser game totals. If he could bring that up, you're looking at a dude with massive upside. So give me Billy Hamilton at that price. I have him ranked 15 amongst my outfielders, and I'm not looking back. I like that price.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Matt and Mike. I love Billy Hamilton because of what he can do in the stolen base department. Yeah, he's one of those guys, though, like, if you take him in an auction or draft, you then have to plan or reconstruct your draft or auction around taking a player like Billy Hamilton. But I think he is got such an elite skill with his speed that he's worth it. And his defense is so good out in center field that he's not going to lose playing time. This isn't a guy that a few years ago, we thought, well, you know, will he lose playing time? Will he get sent down to AAA because he's so bad with the bat? The defense ensures some of that. So you add that with the combination of elite speed and the guy's not going anywhere on a bad Reds team, and they're just going to let him steal because that's what the Reds do. I'm totally fine paying the price tag. I'm totally fine paying even a little bit higher price tag. I mean, in every auction I'm in, I think, this year, other than maybe one with Mike or Matt, I will end up with Billy Hamilton. You know, sometimes in snake drafts, there's someone who might be willing to take him a little bit higher, or I play kind of the waiting game to see if I can get him a little bit lower, so I may not end up with him. But more likely than not, I'm going to end up with him in any auction that I have this year. So, yeah, give me all the shares of Billy Hamilton. Let's go ahead and move on, talk about Wade Davis, traded to the Cubs. We talked about him a little bit because of the move. I want to talk about him because of where he is going in NFBC drafts. And that is, he is going as the number 100 overall player on NFBC drafts, the 10th relief pitcher off the board. Lore, what are your thoughts on Wade Davis and where he's going?
That's kind of weird. I think the trade happened in between drafts mm-hmm. that I did. Because, well, he was 100 with you guys. He was 157 when we did the magazine draft, which was before the trade. And he moved down to 108 after the trade, which is pretty interesting, which is right around where the NFBC has him. Reliever gets to be a hard thing because it kind of depends on what the size of the league is.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of depends on where I'm drafting. I have a tendency, for example, if I'm in a 15-team league and I'm at the wheel or close to it, then I'll take back-to-back relievers, sixth or seventh or eight rounds, two in a row, A, to get it out of the way, B, to try to create a run if I can or some scarcity. But if I'm in a 12-team league, there's 30 closers. I'm not going to worry about a reliever till later anyway because I'll figure I'll be able to pick up a couple. So I don't know if that's necessarily high for him. I like the guy. He gets a lot of strikeouts, which is a good thing. So, that's to his advantage. But I probably would not be drafting a closer. You know, number 100, what, the 15-team league is fifth round. I would probably not draft the closer then.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Wade Davis coming up for this season at that price?
The NFBC jumps are interesting to me, like Lowe was talking about. I mean, the guy is going to be the closer on, two-thirds of the teams in the league, and he jumps from Kansas City to the Cubs, and his draft spot shot 45 spots. I think it's weird because it's not a role change or anything. You know what I mean? But, a little bit of concern with Wade Davis with the velocity down. He came back in the last month of the season and was strong. So hopefully there's nothing to worry about for Wade Davis owners. But I have him a little lower than that. I have him as like my 12th ranked closer. He's the 10th highest guy on the NFBC. I'm the highest guy on our website at 12, which I was kind of surprised at because I'm not really high on Davis. So maybe I'm a little higher than I think I am. But the only thing, I mean, obviously with the team he's on, he's got 40 save upside if he's healthy. But that's the big question, if he is. And, I mean, assuming the Cubs, they said they were able to check him out and they still traded for him. So you have to assume that it's not as bad as people may think it is. So I guess if you want somebody stable, that might be your guy because he's going to be their closer, that's for sure.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Wade Davis for the upcoming season?
Yeah, he only gave up one run in his last nine outings at the end of 2016 here. And, you know, yes, there are some, you know, there are some things that I'm a little worried about, especially, you know, the forearm tightness and, you know, some elbow issues and such. So that's something that you definitely don't want to see when you're drafting a pitcher in the top 100. With that said, you know, the swing strike rate, the strikeout numbers, like Laura kind of mentioned earlier, are absolutely elite. If he were to stay healthy all year, you're looking at a guy that definitely could accumulate 40 saves or so and, you know, could be a top five closer once again. You know, people look at, you know, what the Cubs traded. They didn't trade much. They traded Jorge Soler that, yes, they invested a good amount in when he was younger, but, you know, really haven't given a chance to in the major leagues. So this wasn't a move that, you know, just because they traded Jorge Soler, they're automatically going to have to, you know, make sure that be completely loyal to Wade Davis. That's not the situation here. But with that said, I do believe in him. I took him in the Friends with Fantasy Benefits draft right around pick 100. So I think that that's kind of the sweet spot for him, especially, you know, when you consider some of the guys that are going, you know, much earlier. I think that he has that, he possesses that same upside, but doesn't have that same cost just based on the injury. So hopefully if you have, if you're somebody that likes to gamble a bit, I think that he is the perfect guy for you. But if you are somebody that's risk averse, then he's definitely not.
Yeah, I'm worried about the injuries, and that's, to me, one of the reasons why I mark him down quite a bit in my ranks. I think I have him as my number 15 closer, and so far I'm like the second highest on the Friends of Fantasy Benefits.
See, right?
So, I mean, that's that surprising to me, because I thought I'd be one of the lower ones. But I think everybody's kind of probably having those kind of scares with forearm tightness. I mean, this is a guy who had his entire career derailed because he was supposed to be an elite starter for Tampa Bay with Tommy John. So, I mean, I think that's probably what is scaring people, at least on our site, but not on the NFPC site. So, to me, it's just, you know, I want safety out of my closer if I'm going to spend a high pick on the guy, and which I'm not opposed to doing. I'm not one of those people that says, like, you need to wait on closers, wait for saves. I'm willing to go and get an elite guy, but if I'm going to get an elite guy, I don't want there to be a cloud of doubt when I take him off the draft board. So, to me, there is a cloud of doubt regarding the injury and the forearm tightness and his past issues with Tommy John. So, for that combination, he kind of drops low enough that he's pretty much not going to be taken by me unless I have a change of heart somewhere. Let's go ahead and move on, talk about Dansby Swanson. So we're going to start getting into a little bit lower picks. And Swanson is, you know, one of the top prospects in baseball. Came up last year for the Braves. Is being taken currently as the 189th player off the board. So, Lore, what are your thoughts on Dansby Swanson for this year?
Well, it's funny. The deeper we go, the better I like the gambles. I like Swanson as a gamble that low. He's probably going to start. He's got pretty good minor league numbers. He adjusted, actually, to major league pitching better, in my view, than did Trey Turner. He, you know, walked almost as many times in, what, a third as many at-bats, half as many at-bats, and struck out half as many times again, and registered on-base numbers over 400 a couple times, well, once anyway in the minors. But, you know, definitely had close to strikeout to walk number, you know, pretty much one for one, which I love that right there. He's on a team where I don't think there'll be a lot of pressure this year. That's a good young team. I think they're going to get better, but I don't think anybody's expecting them to do much this year but gain some experience. And I think that's a nice environment for a guy to be able to stretch himself a little and recognize he belongs. And picking him that low, I mean, 189, again, that's – you know, past the 10th round, that's, you know, 11th, 12th round. For a middle infielder, that's not bad for a guy that can hit like that and potentially steal. I like that. So,
Mike, what are your thoughts on Swanson for this upcoming season?
I think that this draft spot is absolutely egregious. Like, there's no way I'm taking Dansby Swanson at 188. I love the guy. I've watched him play probably 25 plus times in Nashville here when he played for Vanderbilt. Love him. There's nobody I'd probably root for more than Dansby Swanson. But, you know, there's just no way at pick 188 when he's going above Marcus Semien, Brandon Crawford, Didi Gregorius, Orlando Arcia, even Kettle Marte, Jose Reyes. Like, those are all guys that I would take above Swanson this year. The lineup around him is absolutely terrible. Other than Freddie Freeman and to an extent, Endurance Ciarte and Matt Kemp, you're looking at a completely empty team. Maybe Malik Smith, if you want to, you know, look at him later. But regardless, there's going to be no run and RBI opportunities here. His power is not going to play. It was well below league average in his small dose of MLB exposure last season. That's not going to improve drastically in 1 year. I do think he will hold his own in terms of plate skills. Like Lord kind of talked about earlier, that is very tantalizing. He hit 313 in the month of September and didn't strike out at an alarming rate. So he certainly can hold his own there, but he's just, for fantasy, he's not a counting numbers guy yet. I think that, you know, 12 to 15 stolen bases is what you'll be getting from somebody like him with a handful of home runs. But I there's no way I can take him above some of those other shortstops I kind of mentioned. I think it's just going a little bit too high.
Matt, you're the prospect guy. Are you going to turn Mike around?
I'm not as harsh as Mike is, but I'm also not as bullish either as Lawyer was. Me and Evan did the Braves preview today, actually. It'll be out in a couple days, and we talked about the Braves lineup, and I actually don't think it's that bad at the top part, which Dansby should be hitting second. I mean, I like Inciarte. He should get on base a lot. He made big strides in the LBP. Dansby hitting second. Freddie Freeman and Matt Kemp hitting 3-4. I think that's plenty enough for Dansby around him. Dansby is going to be a better real-life player than fantasy player. His best asset is the defense and the stability he gives you out there. Mike nailed it. He's not going to give you the blow-away counting stats, but what you will get from Swanson, probably 260 average this year. I would say 8 to 10 homers and probably 12 to 15 stolen bases, which if that doesn't excite you, then you're right, because it shouldn't. But I think he's laying a solid groundwork to be a potential 2020 guy in 2 or 3 years, but that's not this year. So I see the draft position, and I'll go, if I really want somebody at that spot at shortstop, I'll take Tim Anderson 2 picks higher according to ADP, and I'll take all those steals. So I'll wait on Dansby.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a situation in which people look at prospects lists and they go, ooh, you know, top tier prospect. And they don't account that the majority of prospect lists out there are not for fantasy. They're for real life. They include defense and other things along, you know, that are very, very important for the overall makeup of a baseball player. And Dansby Swanson is going to be a very good, high-quality baseball player. I personally lower on him, I think, than both you and Mike in terms of his long-term outlook for fantasy. So I'm definitely very, very down on him for his short-term outlook. He's going right now as the number 14th shortstop off the board. Mike said, in front of Marcus Semien, in front of Brandon Crawford, in front of D.D. Gregorius, I have him as my number 27th shortstop this year. So, like, I'm really low on him. I think he is, like, at best you're going to get a 260 average, 10 home runs, 10 stolen bases, which you can pretty much get from anybody.
It's not a bad NL-only player.
No. I mean, but the thing is, what you're going to have to pay in name value alone in NL-only in 15-team mix, he went, you know, decently high. I can't remember exactly where in our 12-team mock we're doing right now.
Like 159 or something like that?
Yeah, 149. Something like that. And that, to me, that's absolutely insane. You know, there's no way I can do that. He went in the 13th round to Matt Bowie, and you know, as much as I believe Bowie is a fantastic baseball player and a great analyst, I could not pull that trigger. There's no way I could pull that trigger at 159. I don't think I'd put him in my top 300. So to me, there's no way I'm taking Dansby Swanson. I'm more than happy to talk up his acumen as a baseball player in hopes that people will take him in drafts, so I don't, you know, have to worry about another name being on the board, because I'll take advantage of the guys going around his area. But I don't want to have anything to do with Dansby Swanson from a fantasy perspective, short term or long term.
Oh, 80 grade looks, though. He could be on The Bachelor. I mean, he's a fine looking gentleman.
I will interject, though, that I do agree. I would take all the guys, I guess Mike mentioned, and that you reiterated, Justin, that I would take Semien, Crawford, Didi. I would probably, if I was filling a position one in a throwback league, I would probably take those guys over Swanson for sure. I do like Swanson a lot in ultra leagues and keeper leagues where you can bury him. And I think he'll have an okay year. I think he'll do better than we think, but.
The pitch recognition skills are elite.
I would not take him ahead of Brandon Crawford.
Yeah, to me, Brandon Crawford, Gregorius, Simeon, Adzerubel Cabrera, Marte. I mean, I just think there's a lot of guys that not only are going after him, but we're talking about guys that, in Kettle Marte's case, that are going 100 picks later.
Yeah, and they, as has been discussed before, all of those guys have some kind of approved resume of greater, more voluminous than what Dansby's got. That said, I think it was a great trade. I think that Braves are doing. I think the Braves are the baseball's version of the Browns. You watch out in a couple of years; they're going to be really good.
Yeah, I think the Braves are. I think they're doing everything right from an organizational standpoint. You know, you can't really fault them at all from an organizational standpoint. What they're doing, I think, yeah, in 4 to 5 years, we could be looking at an amazing, league competitive team that could compete for some World Series. So I like the direction the organization is heading. Obviously, you got to love that trade that they were able to pull off to get him, because he wasn't the only piece that came over for Shelby Miller, and that's worked out fairly well. Yeah, from a fantasy perspective, not my favorite player. Let's go ahead and move on to Lance McCullers, who's being taken at pick 200, has dealt with injury issues last year that's obviously holding down his value. Laura, what are your thoughts on Lance McCullers for this season?
Again, he's the kind of guy I like that late. I think you guys had him at 248, or no, 200, I think you said. And just for the archivists again, in the Roto-Man magazine, he went 246. In the Roto-Wire magazine, dead on, 199. So that's kind of amazing. But he's the kind of guy I like to gamble on as like a sixth or seventh starter down that far. He is a good strikeout guy. I can live with risk injury that far down in my rotation because I'm probably going to get a couple of guys to cover there anyway. So I'm okay with that. And that said, again, if I could get Marco Estrada for some reason, he's still available then, or even maybe Irvin Santana, I might do that first, just because they've been healthy for a whole season, but I'm okay with McCullers where he is.
Matt, what are your thoughts on McCullers going to 200?
Yeah, I want to echo what Lawyer said, and I love the pick for him there. I mean, yeah, he's going to have he's got the obvious injury concerns, the injuries mounted last year, and it's worth knowing. I mean, he only threw 81 innings last year, 150 the year before that, between a couple levels of the majors and minors. So there probably will be an innings limit this year. Which in head-to-head leagues, you need to be aware of that. Most of my leagues I play in are actually head-to-head. So come playoff time, I have to have other options as starting pitcher. But if you come into that and prepared and are aware of that and maybe go less risk-averse guys like Laura mentioned with like Marco Estrada, and I forget the other guy he mentioned, but you grab guys like that that are safer, that'll be around, you can do that to pair with McCullers. But I think there's so much upside here at 200. I think it's a great pick, so I'm on board with that. Got to love the strikeouts.
Mike, what are your thoughts on McCullers for this season?
Yes, 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 yes. 156 is where he was going last year in drafts, and I don't think there was any pitcher really getting as much hype as Lance McCullers coming into 2016. It was pretty insane. The fact that you're getting a 45 pick discount this year, his strikeout possibility is still the same. I mean, when you look at pretty much the after May where he struggled in June and July, he still put up 10 and 13 strikeouts per nine in those months. Yes, he does struggle with walks, but the 13 and 14% swing strike rate, absolutely amazing. 57% ground ball rate. When you're looking at pitchers, 50 plus percent ground ball rate, 10 plus swing strike rate, and 8 or 9 plus strikeout per nine, that's what you love. And going at pick 200, like you guys have already mentioned, just an amazing gamble to take at that point. Yes, there might be an innings restriction. Yes, there's an injury problem here that could kind of bring itself back up this year, but regardless, you're not paying for that, and the upside is immense. I love Lance McCullers this year. I love this whole entire pretty much from 180 on. I like a lot of the starters. I like Matt Moore. I like Vincent Velasquez, Sean Manaea, Jared Eichhoff, Anthony Desclafani. There's a lot of starters in this lower range that I think could really take a big step forward this year. So I'm finding a little sweet spot in terms of the starting pitcher ADPs right now.
Yeah, I mean, it is a nice little sweet spot because you've got guys like Marco Estrada there. You've got guys like Aaron Nola, James Paxton, Carlos Rodon. Some guys I really like in that area quite a bit. But I love Lance McCullers in the upside right there. Yeah, there's some injury risk for sure, and that's why he's down there. But there's not many guys down there that has thrown, you know, two consecutive seasons of 3.22 ERAs with, you know, last year had an 11.78 K per nine. I mean, that's unreal. I mean, ton of upside. I think, like Matt said, probably going to have an innings limit considering he's only really thrown about 200 innings between the last two seasons. But that's okay. I'll take 140, 150 innings of elite strikeouts and at a pretty great ERA on one of the better teams in baseball in the Astros. So to me, I love Lance McCullers at that spot. And it's nice to actually not pan someone, you know, because I have panned the last couple guys we talked about. Let's go ahead and move on, talk about Eric Thames, and we'll finish with him. Signed with the Brewers, 3-year deal. Interesting guy going off the board on NFBC leagues at pick 248. Mike, what are your thoughts on Eric Thames at that spot?
I don't know. What am I supposed to say about him? Like, I just don't think the upside of a guy at age 30. Yes, I do love the ballpark, and I've always loved, you know, Miller Park in terms of, you know, hitters there. I usually do a pretty good job of calling great seasons from, you know, guys that play in Milwaukee. But I just don't I don't feel like it's necessary. Like, what are you really hoping for with somebody like Eric Thames? I can't even guarantee playing time. I guess the fact that they signed him for that long means he could, have
a my boy Chris Carter,
which is insane. So maybe they have to value him higher than Chris Carter, but Chris Carter strikes out a ton. I guess just kind of looking at it with barely any real analysis here, because I don't know any way to really translate KBO numbers to the major leagues. All I can see is what he did in 2011 and 12, which I think at this point are absolutely, you know, they're not even something I can look at. You know, right now projections have him at 23 home runs, 86 RBIs, 70 runs scored. At those numbers, that's a pretty solid place to get a player like that that's hitting 275 and with 12 stolen bases as well, according to the projections. I just can't bake on that. So I'm just going to avoid, and, you know, maybe he's somebody that I would trade for during the season if I really get a good look at him. And I think that this is something that can continue if he is successful. But I'm just avoiding because I just don't know what to expect.
Well, in depth chart projections over Fangraphs have him hitting 220 with 12 home runs and 6 stolen bases. So, I mean, so it depends on, like, kind of where you're looking. But I do agree. A lot of the projection systems out there have him hitting crazy, crazy numbers. And I just can't personally buy in on it. I think we've seen that some guys come over from the KBO and do fairly well. Jung Ho Kang, for example. But we had Park come over last year and completely bomb out. So to me, I don't know what to believe. I'm probably going to just avoid him because I just don't know that I can pull the trigger. But 248 isn't a bad price. So, like, if I'm desperate at corner infield, you know, kind of late in a draft, I guess you could do worse than Eric Thames, but probably won't be on any of my teams. Laura, what are your thoughts on Eric Thames?
Well, the guy I thought of first, and I don't know if he was big before you guys were really playing, but is Cecil Fielder, who played 160 games with Toronto, hit 39 homers, and had an on-base percentage of about 290 and hit about 240. But had when he went to Japan, he pretty much had a full season's worth of numbers. And he essentially went to Japan so he could learn to hit an off-speed pitch. And when he came back, he hit 50 homers. He was gone for a year. So I don't know specifically if Thames was trying to do that or not. But I do know his on-base numbers and his strikeout-to-walk numbers improved dramatically in Korea over what he'd done in the United States. So if that was his goal, then and he in fact did up his on-base numbers and his contact rate, then he's probably I think no matter what is a gamble, unless you're in a 10-team or maybe 12-team league, he's a pretty good pick at 248. For the Rotoman magazine, he wasn't picked at all, and in RotoWire, he was picked at 219. So that was probably just after he signed. But I think he's okay there. I'm sort of thinking again, Cecil Fielder. He wanted to go there to learn to do something specific, and if that's what he learned, then ideally, it should improve his play. And I guess by drafting him, we'll find out, right?
Matt, what are your thoughts on Eric Thames?
I'm a little bit higher, I guess, than what you guys are. I mean, I was reading something about him a couple weeks ago, and I linked it to it in the chat for you guys to take a look as I explain it. But Jeff Zimmerman, obviously of Fangraphs and many other places, wrote an article about like a little blurb of projections for Eric Thames, and had a tweet thread from Eno Saris breaking down, like, you know, what the Davenport projections and all the Cartwright projections have them for this year, and factoring in the Fangraphs depth charts projection. They averaged all five of those because they have five different systems that they used. Came out with a slash line of 284, 355, 529, which is essentially the same as Nelson Cruz's three-year average. I think that's very, very, very aggressive. Obviously, I don't think he's going to hit that high at all. But, I mean, that gives you a ballpark where we really don't have any idea. It's all over the map. I was aggressive enough in my rankings. I have him ranked as the 16th first baseman. I have him coming in right behind Eric Hosmer and right in front of Kendrys Morales. So I'm splitting the difference there and taking a shot on a guy like that rather than a boring guy like Morales for fantasy purposes. But the big thing with Thames is, or they said I listened to an interview about him a couple weeks ago as well, and they said he was going to try to steal a bag a week. And in Milwaukee, he's going to get the green light, barring anything unforeseen. So that's a nice little thing to add to his value that you might not be thinking of as a first baseman that could potentially steal 10, 12 bases. So, I mean, I'll take a shot.
With 26 caught stealings, right?
Hey, that doesn't hurt me.
yeah, unless you're in a net steals league.
So, I'm fine with that. That's a little sneaky source of value that might be a little out of the box for you from your first base spot. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, I don't think I think the speed is an asset that people aren't kind of taking into account. But for me, I mean, I don't know. I just, a guy that hasn't been in Major League Baseball, you know, since 2012, when he hit 232, 273, the 399. I mean, he's not young. He's 30 years old. You know, this is not a guy who couldn't figure it out when he's young, and now, you know, maybe he's more mature. This is a reclamation project, and sometimes those work out, and sometimes those flame out. And I just, if I can get him cheaply enough, I think he's worth the gamble. But for the most part, I think by the point I get to a draft where I would be thinking about taking him, I'm already going to have my first and corner and util filled up. So,
Justin, Brandon Belt or Eric Thames?
Oh, a Belt. No Belt. Question.
Okay.
I hate Brandon Belt.
That's where Zimmerman put him on his cutoff line. He put him between Brandon Belt and I want to make sure I get the name right. He was between Brandon Belt and CJ Cron. So that's where he slotted
him. I have the most respect for Jeff Zimmerman. I mean, I think he is a fantastic analyst and much better with the statistical side of things than I am. But at this point, I would take Chris Carter, who doesn't have a team. I take Brandon Moss, who doesn't have a team. I take Lucas Duda, who doesn't have a back, over Eric Thames. So,
fair enough.
There you have it, and that is going to end it for us today. Laura, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure, guys. It's always so much fun to talk with you, and look forward to seeing you all soon.
Yeah, I'll be seeing you a couple times. Seeing you at Barf, be seeing you at Tout Wars, and I got to come out and catch some of your music one of these days because I love your music.
Sounds good.
Oh, congratulations, Laura! You found yourself a new stalker.
I thought you were talking about my wife.
can't stalk the willing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Laura, again, give yourself some plugs. Tell people where you can be reached on Twitter, what you do at Masters Ball, and then plug your bands.
I will do that. I'm happy to. Again, it's at Lawr Michaels, LawrMichaels on Twitter. You can find me at Masters Ball every Monday during football season. I write extra points. In 2 weeks, I'll start baseball up with the hot page and the top 10 from our top 250 prospects, which will be released mid-January. And then I also write Bed Goes Up, Bed Goes Down every Saturday, and I cover DFS stuff two, three times a week that I play, including every Thursday if you play PGA. I do golf. And then my band, The Biletones, www.thebiletones.com, play regulars around the East Bay. We play around here, I'd say, every 3 to 4 weeks somewhere in the East Bay. And we've also ventured out as far as Chicago and Madison. So
nice. There you go. Matt, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
MD Tomp FWFB on Twitter, and just plugging away at the team previews and all the prospect mini pods. So it's preview season's always my favorite time of year, updating the rankings, and yeah, that's about it.
And Mike, tell people where you reach, what you're working on.
Reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. You know, check out all of the team previews that we'll be doing, like you guys have already mentioned. I will continue writing my race stuff on fantasypros.com. I will also continue my baseball HQ stuff this season as well, probably with a expanded role. Yeah, and I will release my ranks probably sometime in the next week.
Well, that's good. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can read all my stuff at either FanGraphs or FriendsOfFantasyBenefits.com. I should have an article up this Wednesday on FanGraphs, and you can read all the ranks. We've got every position ranked by all the rankers, except for Mike, who still has to do his, and I'm just going to keep guilt-tripping him throughout the podcast for that. And then definitely check out all the position preview podcasts we're going to have going on. You're going to get at least one podcast a day, every day for the next 6 weeks. In some days, you're going to get two, as me and Matt have been doing kind of prospect profiles for each team, which will come in separately. So definitely check out all that stuff. Please feel free to give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to deliver the amount of content that we are providing for free this year. So that will wrap us up. For Matt, Mike, Lauren, myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.